Blog Talk Radio.
Free Dollar Sterling. Welcome to the war room. We got Dev, Kim, Jimmy, PJ, B. Austin, the Hot Block Commander.
How you wanna end up 1 or 2 hour show to get the brain running with the premise of talk sports on a national level? Bold with the topic, sorta like the rubber. When it's game time, they like the Fab Five during prime time. Sports conglomerates speak their minds a little bit. For sports medicine, sports veterans and greats. The 4 for 26, so the war in Kuwait. It's the war room with 5 knights at the round table. 5 Philly guys, diversified and educated.
Yo, Dame be killing that.
Yo!
What up, War Room family? You are once again live in the War Room, brought to you by War Room Sports on the War Room Sports Podcast Network. That's a lot of War Room. I'm Devin McMillan. I'm joined at the round table as usual by my brothers, Jimmy the Blueprint Williams, and B. Austin, the HBC. All right, everybody, the NBA playoffs are chugging along. 2 teams already in the conference finals waiting for their next opponents. The NFL draft is come and gone with a lot of fanfare. And Donald Sterling is at it again. In 30 minutes, we'll hear from Khalif Stripling of the Alpha Project to discuss their youth program, Protect Your Swag 2.0. That's going down in Philly this weekend. But before we discuss all that, we got a few other topics to discuss and some birthday shout-outs as usual. So get comfy. Make sure you join us right now in the JW Philly Realty chat room at blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom, or join us on Facebook or Twitter at War Room Sports so you can join in the conversations there. You can also call us directly when we open up the Digital Extreme Tech hotline at 323-410-0012. That'll probably be about 45 minutes into the show after we talk with Khalif Stripling. But whatever you do during the week, be sure to visit the new network at WRSPN.com or on our main site, WarRoomSports.com, and listen to some of the best talk radio the Internet has to offer. Sports, lifestyle, culture, entertainment, a whole lot more. The War Room Sports Podcast Network has it all. You can hear shows such as The Broad Street Line with Roy Burton and Chris Domingo, Sports Track Radio with Brandon Pemberton, Pop Spot Sports Radio with Chuck Modiano and The Good Doc, and a whole lot more. So make sure you get over to the network and check them out. In addition to that, don't forget to catch us in syndication on Sundays and Tuesdays, 3 p.m. Eastern Time on FatsRadio.com. That's P-H-A-T-Z, radio.com. Generals, what's good?
You already know, man. Listen to my brother B. Austin murder his keyboard. But you know I'm good.
Death kill.
Keyboard murderer. He laying that Aaron Hernandez down on his keyboard.
Yo, he Aaron Hernandez in his keyboard, B.
I'm shooting at some Donald Sterling, man. They out here. Nat Turner. Hashtag.
We got some exciting stuff to talk about tonight, man. We tried to put the whole Donald Sterling stuff to rest a couple of weeks ago, but Donald Sterling will not put it to rest.
He won't kill, B.
But back then, like, you know, he wouldn't say anything. Now he wants to get on TV. Magic wants to respond to him. So it's a big circus. And we're going to talk about the circus because I like the circus. Shout out to Ringling Brothers.
Shout out to the Soul Circus.
Yeah, the Universe Soul, Joan, all that. Jimmy. These people
know
what happened this week, man. Some crazy stuff happened this week while they were on the ground.
Man, this is absolutely one of the greatest segments in the history of sports radio, and that's while you were on the grind, which is brought to you by DirecTV. If you like a better TV experience, then cable has to offer, which includes the NFL Sunday Ticket. Go to our website, warroomsports.com, click on the DirecTV logo, and order a better TV experience at a discounted War Room Sports sign-up rate. If you call yourself a sports fan, you got to have DirecTV. You watch the draft, you want to see all the rookies, you got to have DirecTV. So get it through us, get the hookup. With that being said,
if you just want to see Johnny Manziel and Michael Sam, you can get that too.
Yo, with that being said, yo, gentlemen, get that JoJo button ready, because as usual, when we start talking about what happened with On the Grind, that's when the JoJo Awards get nominated, so have your fingers ready for the button. The first thing we want to talk about is one Solange Knowles. That's right, we talk about everything here. She laid the smackdown on the homie Sean Corey Carter, better known as Jay-Z, and as his sycophants call him, I ain't calling him that, Jay-Z. Yo, so she put the beats on him in the elevator, man. There's been a lot of speculation.
Beats by Dre?
Yeah, beats on Jay. The one thing I do want to say, and the only comment I have in reference to this whole thing is, I love how you holier than thou people start talking about he's worth $500 million or why don't you mind your business and all. You know, when it's somebody popular, it's like slander's not allowed. As a person of the internet who slanders everyone, including myself, yo, nobody is above slander. And if I saw two people I didn't know in the streets and like, a chick ran up on a dude and laid the smack down like this, I'd probably be making up stories too and having fun with it. I laugh at life to stop from crying. So with that being said, all you holier-than-thou people, yo, go jump in the pit of unfortunate. Gentlemen, how do you feel about this story?
Yo, Jimmy had to, yo, he had to get a couple things off his chest.
You
have a lot of
perspective. You see people with all that, you only saying
no,
that
no,
JB
definitely,
worth
definitely.
$800 million. Like,
listen,
come on, man, FOH.
Listen, idol worship and dick riding has taken over society, and so it's out of control. Now,
family show, man.
Dev, I'm very interested in your perspective as a married man who can possibly add some insight to this.
Well,
this is someone's sister, and this is his sister-in-law whooping his ass. What do you think happened? How can you rectify this? They said she was drunk. They said she was high. They said this, that, and the third. I think I know what happened, so we're going to get to the War Room Sports speculation, but I'm very interested in what your take on this is.
Well, you know, we've seen all week. We've seen everybody speculate. You know, we've seen it kind of go away the next day. Well, not the next day, but, you know, you saw Jay and Beyonce doing their courtside thing the next day at the Nets Heat game. Then after that, you saw Jay-Z and Solange doing their jewelry shopping thing, whether that was just for public image or what, they did that. Now they released a statement saying basically, you know, nothing. Families rumble and that's it. We're good. So let's go back to the initial speculation. You know, it looked like a weird situation for me because if you look at it from every angle, you know, people were saying, well, Beyonce wasn't doing anything. Solange looked like the bad guy, you know, and then it was like Mean City everywhere you look. But I'm thinking about the whole Beyonce not doing anything and how angry Solange was. And let me note that people had to make sure they pointed out that Solange had gotten into an argument with somebody at the party earlier. So, of course, that means, you know, since she was already upset, there was no way that Jay-Z could have pissed her off enough to make her do this because she was already wilding on everybody, which I think is ridiculous. This seems like, and this is all speculation, but to me, this looks like a situation where that girl was defending her sister for some reason. And that I've seen domestic altercations like this where, you know, one sister is riding for her sister because her husband did or said something wrong to her. But since she's stuck in the middle and she might be a little bit timid, she's not saying or doing anything while it's going down. Because, frankly, maybe he deserved whatever was going on, you know, so she didn't want to get in the middle of that. So I don't know what it was, man, but I refuse to believe that, you know, Solange was just in a bipolar state of mind at the time because people pointed out that she's been diagnosed with that as well. But I just refuse to believe that dude didn't do anything or say anything to set her off like that.
Yo, I wanna preface my statements by saying that we are all of a generation where we go back to when Jay-Z was Jay-Z. I mean, Hawaiian soapy, Hawaiian shirts, you know, the Range Rover 4.0 versus 4.6 when he took a shiitake on Nace. So I just want that to be clear. Like, I'm a fan of Jay-Z, not this new dude, but Jay-Z. So I don't say this to defame that gentleman, but there is no possible way. There is no possible way that a logical, objective human being can paint this picture that this was all on Solange. Human beings just don't do that. Shout out to the brother Raheem Islam, Dr. Jerkenstein. He made some interesting points on social media. He said, number one, y'all need better idols, and I agree with that. Number two, Jay-Z is doing something wrong to harm Beyonce. No way in the world does a wife allow anyone, even her blood, flesh and blood, to beat on her husband like that, unless he deserved it. Not to mention, it's her little sister. I went to break up a domestic fight once and ended up almost fighting both the man and the woman because husbands and wives are going to protect theirs. The third point, I always liked Solange, looks and all. That's irrelevant, Dr. Jurgenstein, so I'm not going to read point number three. But point number four, Jay ain't stupid. He knows that there were cameras in that elevator, and he wasn't going to do anything back to hurt his image. We all know that Jay-Z has a very slick wit, very sharp intellect, and he is sarcastic to a fault. So if you combine that with the possibility of some sort of domestic dispute between he and Beyonce, so now Solange is looking at this like, Jay's already doing something to my sister I don't like. I'm not going to put it on Jay and say he's hitting her because we don't know that. But he's doing something towards his wife that her sister doesn't like. And then Jay being Jay, he's going to say something slick that's like a jab to Solange's eye. So her being young, 27, and a firecracker, she responded to that bait. And I don't think Jay thought it was going to blow up to that proportion. But this isn't the first time that they've had an altercation. And allegedly, Jay-Z was interacting with Rachel Roy, his ex-business partner's ex-wife, Dame Dash's ex-wife. And Solange saw this and took issue with it because she has also had issues with Jay-Z kind of interacting with other females, particularly Rachel Roy has been one of them. And she didn't like the fact that they were cozying up to one another. And she took it upon herself to say something to Rachel Roy. And then, you know, allegedly Jay and Beyonce getting in the elevator. They're going back to wherever they're going back to. Jay-Z wanted to continue partying, and it said that he was headed to Rihanna's after party where Rachel Roy was going to be co-hosting. Solange took issue with that, flew off the handle with the history that she feels is between her brother-in-law and her sister.
And he was going to the Rihanna party. He was going without Beyonce.
Without being
kind of like,
so
take you to the room, I'm out.
You already are dealing with someone that sister-in-law doesn't like on a friendship basis, and now you're going to go party with the chick after we have words. But I, again, there's something there, man. There's something there.
My whole thing is, like, I don't honestly, I'm not even going to speculate and give a big story. I could care less. Because this is family, and I do agree with them in terms of that. I think we could have fun and speculate about what happened because that's just what we do as humans. But if I go to a family barbecue and there's not a fight, then we didn't have fun. That's all I'm saying.
The person who released this elevator tape to TMZ has been fired. But they made $250,000 off the tape. But they might have charges brought up on them. That's possible if Jay-Z and them wants to do that, and they probably will. But, all right, anyway, you know, for Solange and her behavior, for whatever Jay-Z may have did, and I'm going to throw us in here for talking about this as long as we have. We all know. Be ashamed
no
of
doubt.
Ourselves, the way we carry ourselves, man.
Here's a good story, man. You know, and we always talk about sports and how it reflects society and how you hear it. It's like when you watch sports, right? We all love movies. We love horror movies. We love dramas. Some brothers love romantic comedies. You know, whatever it may be. But sports kind of has all that. And here's a good story.
Rom-com.
Rom-coms. Some people like, you know, smut. Whatever it may be, sports has that too. Shout out to Donald Sterling. Yo, the NCAA makes an exception to allow Boise State to help their homeless recruit. Now, the guy's name is Antoine Turner. He grew up in New Orleans. He lost his mother to cancer when he was four, had a strained relationship with his father, and he lost his uncle during Hurricane Katrina, who was taking care of him. So my man has had it rough. Lately, he's been living in the car of his girlfriend or on park benches or wherever he can just, you know, get some shut-eye. But the NCAA allowed Boise State to bring him in early so he can have pretty much, you know, shelter and food.
Room and board, yeah.
Yeah, more or less. So, you know, although the NCAA are a bunch of vultures and criminals, they did allow something like this to go down. So shout out to them. You know, vultures and criminals do good things as well.
But you know what, Jim? This was almost a JoJo Award nomination for the NCAA. You know, because initially, you know, Boise had to point out to the school not to help this guy out because we would get in trouble,
the
sanctions for it. But the NCAA kind of took the case, looked at it as an individual case instead of, you know, with its blanket rules or whatever, and made an exception. You know, and I had a lot of conversations with a few sports dudes about this, and they were saying this is how the NCAA should operate all the time. Like, I kind of understand if that was the case and they had to look at every single case as an individual case, that'd be a whole lot of work for any organization. But for this is definitely a special situation, and they could not let this man continue to sleep on park benches and cars, you know, in motels when he could get a couple of dollars. Like, so, you know, shout out to them for doing something right for a change, man.
And
shout out
to the dope dealers who took care of a young boy while he was coming up playing high school ball. Although you're selling poison to your community and killing your own kind, you did look out for this one gentleman who needed help and got him to the point where now he can go to college on a scholarship. So, you know, the story ends well, but it's one of them good stories you like to hear every once in a while. Be awesome. What are you going to say, good brother?
No, I like when people go beyond tradition and the, you know, traditional adherence to rules and laws to really look at the spirit of justice, you know, and this is one case where a huge bad organization did a good deed. So, yeah, it's like y'all said.
Y'all imagine, though, the kind of backlash and the kind of press they would have gotten had they not made this exception? Yeah, they couldn't win going the other way. So I'm giving them props, but at the same time, I'm sitting here saying they did what they had
to do. Yeah, so you basically calling them Adam Silver, basically.
Basically.
Yeah. They got the Adam Silver on, man.
The players.
Well, this next story right here, I know Jimmy the Greek is somewhere watching this story and having a good time with it. But this teen in Texas named Gary Haynes, he's been able to catch his own 40 to 45-yard pass. Now, what we mean by that is he takes the football, he throws it 40 to 45 yards in the air, and then is able to run and catch his own 40-yard pass. Yo, and all I'm saying, when I saw this, the first thing I thought of is Jimmy the Greek is somewhere laughing, yo. But, I mean, it's a crazy athletic feat. I mean, we've all tried it. I mean, you know, listen, we've all tried to throw a football and catch it ourselves, but you're 40 to 45 yards, see?
Yo. And if you haven't seen it, the video is posted on our Facebook page, facebook.com/warroomsports. Just scroll. It was a few hours ago that we posted it. I think it's a very impressive feat. But, you know, what most people talk about first when they see this video, you know, how fast the kid is. And let's say he runs like a sub 4.5 40, you know, at his age.
Mm-hmm.
The fact of the matter is I'm just as impressed with his arm strength as I am with his speed, because do you know how far in the air, you know what kind of hang time you got to give the football for you to run 40 to 45 yards down the field and catch it? So this dude, I'm assuming he can probably throw the ball 65 to 70 yards if he was just going for distance with the football. But to throw the ball in the air high enough and far enough for it to go 40 to 45 yards and hang up there in the time for him to first throw, because remember, he's not just starting off at the block like a normal dude running the 40. He's throwing the ball with all his might, and then he has to take off running, and then he gets down there fast enough to catch it. This is a crazy athlete right here.
Yo, my thing is,
what's
more impressive?
What's more impressive one day?
Him doing that or Jamarcus throwing the ball from his knees through the goalpost, like, you know?
I think I think this is more impressive because somewhere, somehow, there is a Caucasian football coach that's trying to figure out how this can be used, perhaps by RG3 or Michael Vick or never mind. Go ahead.
Saying is this, though, and the thing is, his coach initially didn't believe it when he saw the first video, which was posted on Vine. So he went in, he went to his coach, had his coach pull the camera out, and did it in front of his coach. And so now everybody's requesting him, let me see you do it. And shout out to the young boy, Gary Haynes. He was like, yo, if you want to, he said, if you want to see me do it, come to Texas and bring a grand. I'll do it for a grand. So,
word.
Yo, so shout out to Gary Haynes. My man said, bring a stack. He said, bring a stack and I do it.
Yo, I like it. And if I'm dude, it's going to be no crowds allowed. Everybody with their stack. We're going
to
go somewhere, maybe,
go
somewhere blocked off. I'm going to have some guards. You know, I'm going to pay them $10 a piece with my stack.
Hustling athleticism, man. So shout out to Gary Haynes,
right,
man.
It's not going
to
be
any
hoops. Everybody got to come pay their stack.
One of those a day.
Yo, gentlemen, I think it's time to get the JoJo Award ready.
Okay.
I think the JoJo Award will be pulled back out later during the show, but for right now, get your hand ready for the button, because this story right here, I'm not even going to get into detail. I'm just going to say Aaron Hernandez has been indicted on a 2012 double murder in Boston, yo. So up-and-coming tight end from the New England Patriots, who was already in jail, for other charges, attempted murder, he tried to lay the murder game. Yo, they're putting bodies on him. Yo, like the Iceman, Greg.
You should be ashamed of yourself. The way you carry yourself.
Yo, what was that serial killer's name? Greg Szczynski, Kaczynski,
I know exactly who
you're
talking
about. They called dude the Iceman, and dude was just like laying the murder game down and going home and like, you know, eating meatloaf with his family and chilling like he wasn't a murderer, so.
That's how your man was.
Aaron Hernandez is the new Iceman. Yo,
yeah, he was out there killing people, and then he in the locker room helping dudes with their shoulder pads. And then you be in the locker room helping Gronk put his shoulder pads on.
Yo, shoot me a tweet or go to the chat room and let me know what the Iceman's name was, yo, because this is what this reminded me of. I watched a documentary on dude, but I can't think of his name. But anyway, I know B. Austin has some words for this gentleman.
Yo, he has me speechless. Like, I don't, what type of psychopath is he that he, a millionaire, playing a child's game, living out a dream, but he's also for hire, hitman for hire, like, yo.
Because they keep using words, be often like execution style and this and that. Because remember, we'd heard that he was being investigated for this double murder in Boston, but now he's officially being indicted for it while you're already in jail awaiting trial on another murder. What is wrong with Ing?
Yo, I have no clue what's wrong with Ing, but this is like, yo.
More murder.
This is the Aaron Hernandez theme song.
In the Irish. You could run the whole fucking country. You could be the next John D. Rockefeller.
Nobody noticed that. Nobody gave a shit.
Don't even start with the chorus, dude.
But the bigger we get, the more we're taking from other people.
Yeah. In a mahogany, black scenery, that was lightning and raindrops. I'm tied up in a basement cocaine spot like Bangkok.
Yo, why you do that, though? Because now I want to hear this song. Like, now I'm just going
to, everybody got quiet. Like,
you know what I mean? Like, for those who don't know, that song is Mo Money, More Murder, Mo Homicide, a.k.a. the Aaron Hernandez theme song. But, gentlemen, I mean, he definitely gets the JoJo Award as of right now, because more idiots will come up later. It's a crazy story.
He's a leading nominee.
Somebody got to his name, because now it's bothering me. Greg, do something, you know. Dujinsky, whatever it is.
I really don't have much to say on it. Like, this is blowing my mind. Oh,
yeah. The DA seems convinced that he was the gunman in this whole thing. So that's another thing. I keep telling these dudes they're doing crime wrong. If you got the money, man, you pay somebody else to do that. But
or in the words of Tretch, yo, you do your dirt all by your lonely. Because, yo, here's the thing, yo. He's not paying anybody. He's putting his own work in. This is what makes the story so crazy. And it's like, yo, when's the movie come out? Like 20 years from now, when we are on our show, like 6,000 or whatever, like, yo, we're going to be going to the movie premiere of the Aaron Hernandez story, yo, because this is going to be an interesting story.
Yo, like Devin said, yo, they bringing cats over on a boat and they backflipping dudes for $3,500 in a green card. Like, come on. What's really the problem, man?
There it is. Richard the Iceman Kuklinski. Shout out to Skyview Kevin. We appreciate that in the chat room. But, yeah, Kuklinski. Bill's saying it wrong. He wrote it out for me. But anyway.
I don't know how to say it.
Before we get off these grind topics, Skyview has a question in the chat room. I want to see what you gentlemen's response is. We do not condone putting your hands on a woman. But he says, how many kicks and punches do you let slide? He says, you know we're all gentlemen, but is there a number, like, you know, when someone's going in on you where you just got to be like, look, I refuse to answer the question, so I want to know what you guys got to say.
No, even if it's like, even if you have a boiling point number, I mean, you probably still don't got to hit her with the jab or anything like that, or the right cross. But you know, you're a man and she's a small woman.
Shaker.
I think a gripping up.
Like a salt
shaker. In order. Yeah, I mean, you grip her up and let her know how strong you are when she can't get out of that, just to give her an idea of you're going to stop doing this because I'm this strong and you don't want to go down this road.
You can't just get up and say, you're going to jail now. Can't do that.
I'm not going to bust her out of the chair
or
anything like that.
No uppercut.
But sometimes you do have to grip up. Even in a mode of self-defense, you have to grip up. Because if you just stand there and you keep letting – and he's in an elevator, so he has no choice. He can't walk away. So if you have to stand there and take it, then you have to do something. I mean, you don't have – like I said, you don't have to punch her, but a grip up is in order. Just to calm her down and to let her know, you know, this is not what you want.
Yeah, that was crazy. B. Austin, do you have an answer to that question? And by the way, Skyview, what's your answer to the question? I mean, what do you do? B. Austin, what's your answer to that question, man?
Yo, Skyview told me that Ike is one of his heroes. I just want to put that out there. I'm probably along the lines of the good brother Devin. I'm 6'1 and 250, so me hitting a woman just that ain't gonna happen. That ain't gonna
end well.
Yeah, that ain't gonna end well for me. Nor is it gonna end well for Ray Rice. So for me, I'm just gonna probably grip. I'm gonna grip her up. She's 5'7", 120. I can immobilize her without striking her, and she can't move. So I'm good there.
With the grip up, you don't have to shove her or anything like that. I'm going to grip her up.
Nope.
The elevator doors are going to open. I'm going to tighten my bear hug, and I'm going to gently lay her on the elevator floor, and then I'm going to walk out the elevator.
I'm about to say something else. I'm about to say, yo, this is a family show, B.
All right, man.
Anyway.
Let me give out these birthday shouts real quick, man. We got to get the guests on the line or whatever. All right, everybody, birthdays, because we got a lot of them today, are brought to you by Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. For the best and comprehensive treatment to injuries to the foot, ankle, and lower extremities, visit Dr. Monique Roll of Alexandria Podiatry Associates. Treating patients in the D.C., Maryland, Virginia area and beyond, visit alexandriapodiatry.org or call 703-379-0700. And tell them War Room Sports sent you.
It's my birthday. Yay!
All right. We got a birthday shout-out today for tennis star Andy Murray, turns 27. Baseball star Justin Morneau, he turns 33. Baseball pitcher Josh Beckett turns 34. Football bust Ryan Leaf turns 38. Football great Ray Lewis turns 39.
Trying to tell y'all, God has never made a mistake. He's never made a mistake.
Football very good. Rod Smith turns 44. Football one-hit wonder Desmond Howard turns 44. Football great Emmitt Smith turns 45. Great pitcher John Smoltz turns 47. And shout out to one of my favorite talking heads of all time, no Mike, Dan Patrick turns 58 today.
Yo!
So shout out to Dan Patrick and shout out to all those other brothers. Salute from the War Room to everybody on their birthdays.
My birthday, yay!
And real quick before we get our guests on the line, we'll go to this call right after this. Check out our website at warroomsports.com. While you're there, be sure to sign up for the War Report. That's our weekly newsletter. Click on the Contact Us tab to send a message about the company, the show, to inquire about sponsorship and advertising opportunities. For general inquiries, just email us, info@warroomsports.com. While you're browsing the site, click around. Click on memorabilia. You can buy War Room Sports merchandise. Click the blog tab to read some articles. Click the respective icons and tab to like our Facebook page, to follow us on Twitter. Subscribe to our iTunes podcast. Watch our videos at warroomsportstv.com. You can listen to the network shows at wrspn.com. And you can download our free War Room Sports mobile app on Android or iPhone to get everything I mentioned on the go whenever you want to. Join the JW Philly Realty chat room right now. During the show, blogtalkradio.com/thewarroom. To enter the chat room, just sign up for a free profile on Blog Talk Radio. If you don't have one, if you don't want one, you know, you can sign in through your Facebook and Twitter accounts. And while you're at it, click follow. That'll get you updates and reminders about the show. We'll be taking questions and reading posts from Facebook, Twitter, and the chat room during the show. To call in and speak with us, dial the Digital Extreme Tech hotline. That's 323-410-0012. Press 1 when prompted. If you're already listening from your phone, just press 1 if you want to talk. So before we get to Khalif Stripling from Project Alpha to talk to us about Protect Your Swag 2.0 going down in Philly this weekend, let's get Varee on. He's on the Digital Extreme Tech hotline calling out of the D.C. area. Varee, what's going on, man?
Hey, what's up, Dev? Can y'all hear me?
Yeah, we can hear you.
Yeah, we got you.
Yeah, strip club? All right. Nah, man, I'm just pre-gaming, man. Just waiting for my Wizards to get on. Pre-gaming.
You down at the phone booth?
Well, no, I'm not at the phone booth. No, I'm just seeing if we can force this game 7 tonight.
Okay, he's just getting drunk at the crib. So what's on your mind?
Yeah, I was really calling, not sports-related, but since y'all on the topic of Jay-Z and Solange, who do y'all think ultimately won in that whole situation?
Actually, I think Solange won, because from what I hear, she has an album coming soon. And who wasn't thinking about Solange and her album prior to her trying to finish Jay-Z like she's in Mortal Kombat? Besides that, I mean, this is all stuff that I'm hearing. It's not like I'm going to do research on what Solange is doing. But I hear, like, her appearances, like, people are calling her to do appearances and stuff, and that's always great when you got an album coming up. Besides that, I mean, Jay-Z, from what I read from a lot of people on the Internet, from what I'm reading and what I have read, it seems like he's coming off well just because he didn't do anything back. People are saying he handled it the right way, so...
Here's my response to that. At the end of the day, I think TMZ once again is one. we live in a society where people are idol worshippers, right? So with that being said, if Jay-Z would have hauled off and DDT'd her, people would have found a way to make it as if he didn't do anything wrong. So he was going to win regardless, because he wins just by living in America in 2014. Because, you know, some people were just going about, like, you know, giving him a blumpkin, you know, after getting smacked up. I mean, it's kind of crazy.
Didn't beat her up.
There's a handful of people that have reached an elite status of, you know, idol worship, such as, like, Jay-Z, LeBron, Beyonce. Barack Obama, Michael Jordan. Yeah, there's certain people that have reached
Olivia,
a certain level.
Olivia Pope.
The character, not Carrie Robinson, but the actual character.
Not Carrie, but Olivia Pope. So there's a handful of people that have reached that status where, yo, it doesn't matter what they do, they're going to win regardless. They win by waking up. So shout out to Jay-Z for that. But,
all parties involved won. That's basically what my brother is saying. All parties involved won, because in 2014, there is no such thing as bad press. unless you're in an Aaron Hernandez type situation. So,
but not even
Beyonce,
not even bad press for a guy like Jay-Z, who's just to this point managed to do everything right. Because I don't,
yeah,
I mean,
video footage on the internet from years ago of Jay-Z like mushing and backhanding a chick. So he's actually getting props for not
for
doing that this time.
Yeah.
It was during the
the
concert tour that they had that they actually made
Rock
the money
Hard Knock Life.
Hard
Knock
Life.
One of them joints. Yeah, they got
footage
of him on the internet.
I wasn't aware
like,
of that.
Mushing a chick.
I mean,
so,
he hasn't done anything wrong. I mean, he also hasn't made a great album in like a decade. But it doesn't matter because once you get to a certain level, nothing else matters,
yeah,
man. You know, it is what it is. Look, salute
no,
to him
right,
for getting
right,
there.
Right.
Yo, salute
Vareen,
to Beyonce for getting
don't,
there.
Vareen,
but
everybody,
you don't think
all of their fans, all of their fans are taking a supportive position. Like Beyonce's fans are saying, look at how ladylike she is and her ability to stay above the stay above the fray.
That's just because she was scared.
That small amount of people, but Solange's fans are saying, look at how she will ride for her flesh and blood. We know that camel. That camel is hitting on
Yo!
Him. With this. Look at how great Solange is. So they're all winning. TMZ is winning. The guy that needs to take got $250,000. Once he gets sued and he loses $200 of it, he's still going to come up by $50,000. Yo, everybody wins. Because
the tax is going to take the other 50.
Interesting.
So what's your thoughts, Vareen?
Interesting.
What's your
well,
thoughts?
Well, I'm thinking Jay-Z won ultimately because if he had did something stupid, you know, choke slam or did, you know, put his hands on her, the media would have chewed him out. All of a sudden, Jay-Z's a bad guy. You know, it would have been like probably like the Chris Brown situation, I'm thinking, if he had put him on.
No.
I mean,
know,
Jay sold,
you know,
Jay sold drugs for
no.
a living, and Jay sold drugs for a living, and came up off like misogynist lyrics. So it doesn't matter.
Vareen.
No, but Chris Brown.
Grown
about
men
after
walk
Rihanna,
around and call this man God.
Damn.
Grown men call him God. Like
no, but he still even Chris Brown still got his shot after like beating Rihanna to a pulp. Like the reason why Chris
right.
Brown's star might be declining
Chris
now is because
Brown
he won't
no
stop.
Chill.
Yeah, he has no chill button, so he won't stop doing stupid stuff. So, I mean, look at R. Kelly. They all get another shot after doing heinous things. So,
right, so you guys don't think this press is bad for Jay-Z?
I don't think it's bad for him. No.
Not necessarily?
No.
Yo, I mean, like
what,
you said, even
what,
if, even
what,
if
what,
he'd so stolen her, it would have been bad for a minute, but ultimately he would have found a way to flip it.
My thing is, like, for what,
Jay-Z,
though? His albums aren't good anyway, but it doesn't matter. I mean, I guess if you're talking about his sports agency, maybe that.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, but at the end of the day, the people that sign with him because they're fans of his. I mean, you understand what I'm saying?
Yeah.
So it's like, he's built
you're
up.
You're right, though,
And credit to him because he's worked for that. But people work to get to a point where, you know, it doesn't even matter.
Yeah. He's definitely on that.
I'm not saying it's the right thing, man, but we live in this world, so we know how people are every day.
Yo, popularity right now, because these dudes, this generation is real, really, really low on having dads to be real heroes, yo, they will put anybody in the hero seat. So they all win.
True.
Yeah. Anyway, man, appreciate y'all getting me in, getting my call.
No doubt. We're going to
DC
we're
Rising,
talking about
man.
Your Wizards around the end of the show before tip-off.
Blizzard.
Talk about that a little bit.
No, all right, I ain't doing nothing, man. I'm pre-gaming until game time, so.
All right. Good luck to y'all tonight, man.
They're going to go night-night.
All right, then.
Go night-night.
He said, Tom, go night-night. All right, man. So let's talk about – we had an interview the other day with Khalif Stripling of Project Alpha / Project AKA. So, you know, it's a frat sorority thing. But they do something in the Philly area every year called Protect Your Swag. I'm not sure if it's been called that for the past 23 years, but they've been doing it for the past 23 years. And I'm just going to shut up. I'm not going to keep talking just like you'll hear me say in the interview. I'm going to let him explain everything. So this was our talk with Khalif Stripling of Project Alpha. if you have children in the Philly area from ages 13 to 17, you really want to listen to this right now.
Blog Talk Radio.
All right, everybody in War Room land, we are in the War Room with Khalif Stripling. He's here to talk about Protect Your Swag 2.0. That's an event going on in Philadelphia this weekend for the youth, for teenagers, age 13 to 17. But I'm not going to sit here and keep talking because I don't have all the information. So, Khalif, tell everybody in the audience what that is exactly.
Hey, everybody. Let me start off first off. Thank you, gentlemen, again for giving me the opportunity to promote the program on your show. I really appreciate it. When I reached out, I didn't expect this opportunity, but I definitely appreciate it.
You know War Room for the kids, man.
That's right.
You already know.
We got a truth to the young black youth, man.
Absolutely. The program is titled Project Alpha Project, a.k.a. Protect Your Swag 2.0. It's a program we do annually, and it's designed to educate young men and women in the Philadelphia area about sexual health-related issues, including abstinence, disease prevention, pregnancy, things along those lines, as well as, like, responsible behavior and decision-making and self-esteem and things like that. We do the program through workshops and open forums. The workshops are facilitated by health professionals professionals in the healthcare field in the area. And it's just basically a program we do collaboratively with a local Alpha chapter, Rho Theta Omega, and my chapter, Alpha for Alpha, Omicron Delta Lambda chapter. We work together with them, and they've been having the program for over 20 years.
So basically, what y'all are going to be doing is having those difficult conversations with these teenagers. So, I don't have any teenage kids myself, so I kind of, sit back sometimes and think about the day when I'm going to have these type of conversations. So what was the inspiration? I know you said it's an annual thing, and I'm sure, you said it was, how long has it been going on, like 20, 23 years?
Yeah, it's been, right, they've been having the program for 23 years, working with the AKAs. Actually, it's a part of one of our national initiatives by the national organization. We have four national programs that the national organization pushes each chapter to facilitate an event or a program for. And Project Alpha is one of them. That's what this is, satisfying that requirement.
Okay. So where I was going with that was, you said 23 years, like we were in high school back then. So I'm pretty sure you weren't, you weren't there for the initiative stages of this whole thing. But can you talk a little bit about what the inspiration is behind doing this every year?
It's just to try to, try to work with these kids out here, and it's getting worse and worse, and we watch news every day, and, kids kill each other, kids pregnant, we had a lot of kids, people went to school with pregnant as teens, and it just seemed like it's getting worse, and it's growing and getting bigger and bigger. So, the inspiration is just try to reach out to these teenagers, get them while they're teenagers. You don't want to get them too young because it might go over their head. But right about this time when they're, teenagers in high school, getting into girls and girls getting into boys, try to just give them some knowledge, some information.
Yeah, no doubt.
Now, Khalif,
I have a question, right, just in terms of how everything goes down. When they're getting the information, are they in the room with their parents or their parents are not there?
No, the parents are typically not there. We prefer that because we feel that would be more open for them to, ask questions, especially, and be involved with the with the workshops.
That's exactly why I asked. I know if their parents were there, they would shut down. They ain't even trying to talk about it. You know what I mean? But
You
know, you
will get a higher level of honesty if the parents aren't in there with them.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, freedom. They feel free to discuss these things. You know, a lot of times they won't discuss with parents that would deal with someone else if they feel comfortable.
Yeah. The only issue with that in 2014 is some of their parents probably should be in the class too. They're only about 2 years older.
That's true. We used to have they've had workshops for parents, but we hadn't. We won't have one this year, but we probably will have to be definitely going to bring it back next year. So
yeah,
that's
absolutely.
A very
they
good
need
point.
Them to
someone needs to be out there.
Yeah.
So you named some of the topics, like, you know, safe sex, you know, behavioral type stuff. But what other kind of, because I see that it's going to be, you know, panels, workshops and stuff like that. What kind of panels are you guys going to have? Like, and if you know, like, what kind of workshops will go on during the day?
The workshops, like I said, one of the workshops is just basically on sexual health issues like STIs, STDs. You know, they explain to you, you know, what how you catch these and how you can't catch them and what you do to when you have them, prevent them, and you know, talk about pregnancy to young ladies especially, you know, and you know, how the ways to avoid it using condoms and, you know, and female condoms and, you know, all things like that to try to, you know, give them something to work with and some kind of understanding. And additionally, we have, like, healthy relationships is actually one of the titles of one of the workshops. So basically, in that session, you know, they teach, you know, men how to get along with other men and how to approach, you know, the females as well, how to talk to them and how to deal with issues they have without getting into fights, you know, healthy ways to talk things out and, you know, ways to avoid the violence that's going on out here, you know, just giving them alternatives and also telling them what, you know, what's the results of that, giving them a real discussion of what the results are if you make bad decisions.
It definitely sounds like a really good program, a healthy program, you know, and it's getting into a lot of areas, a lot of aspects that kids, like we just said a few minutes ago, that they really don't talk to their parents about. So
right.
these probably will be difficult conversations to have, but I think it's something that's needed, and I'm glad you guys are doing it. You know, being from Philadelphia, I didn't even know that this program was going on so long. We probably could have used it back in the day, but we turned out all right. But no, I think everything that you guys are going to cover, the things you guys are going to cover are definitely things that are needed, you know, in society. These kids need to hear this kind of stuff. So I definitely salute you guys for what you're doing. Before we get you out of here, though, just give out the info, you know, let people know how to register just in case they have some children that they might want to send down. How can they register? You know, where is it being held? What time, et cetera?
Okay, the program is Saturday, May 17th, from 10 a.m. to 3 p.m. The doors open at 9:15 to kind of get registrations and, you know, we have a breakfast for them. So all that takes place around, you know, 9:15 to 10. For young men and women ages 13 to 17. And it's at Drexel University's new college building. That's on 245 North 15th Street. Basically off of, if you're on the, you know, the Devon Street Freshway, 676, you just get off at 15th. I mean, get off at Devon Street. It's right on that corner. And students, it's still time to register. So if you want to register a kid that's, we have an Eventbrite site, and it's at www.projectalpha2014.eventbrite.com.
Okay.
And, you know, we have registrations open till Thursday night. Through Thursday night. So.
All right, and everybody, you can also get to that link from if you go to the War Room Sports Facebook page as well. That's facebook.com/warroomsports. We've had links up every day, and we'll do that until you guys finish registering.
Yeah, well, we also have a page as well. Project Alpha, Project Engage, Philadelphia, the Facebook page. So if you want to go there and get some information, and also has a link to the website as well, the Eventbrite site. So
cool. We'll also we'll put that up on our Facebook page as well.
All right. I appreciate it. Again, I can't say thank you enough for the opportunity to just be on here and present the program and, hopefully get, a lot of kids out. It's going to be fun.
Yeah.
Yeah, like I said, lunch, breakfast, it's not going to be stuffy. And we'll have a little, entertainment. So.
No doubt. And thank you for, and everybody else that's behind it for putting on this kind of event. And definitely thank you for coming on and talking about it with us. This is the kind of stuff we need in society. And if y'all need us next year,
absolutely.
I don't know if you want Jimmy to come down and talk to the kids about sex, but
about
y'all need us, man.
I want to come down and kind of get a see what it's about. Y'all definitely want to come down.
Cool. All right, man. Well, thanks a lot. And it was good to have you on.
Thank you. I appreciate it. Have a good night.
All right, you too. All right, everybody, that's Khalif Stripling from the Protect Your Swag 2.0 event going down in Philly this weekend. You heard the information. If you didn't, it'll be on our Facebook page at facebook.com/warroomsports. Get your kids down there, ages 13 to 17. These are topics that they need to hear about. And if they're not hearing about them at home, let some responsible people tell them in the streets, not the irresponsible people.
Yes, sir. All
right, then. Make sure you're, if you're in the Philly area, send your kids down there. And that information is on our Facebook page now, so go check it out, facebook.com/warroomsports. All right, let's get into some hot topics real quick, everybody. Well, not really real quick because we got some crazy hot topics. Jim, tell everybody who Hot Topics is brought to them by.
You already know Hot Topics are brought to you by Audible. Is your schedule too hectic to read as much as you want? Try audiobooks, kick back, and let someone else do the reading for you. Listen, this is a new wave in books. Audiobook sales are through the roof, and Audible is a big reason why. Everyone knows I'm an Audible subscriber. I get two books at a time. And right now I'm reading Mark Echo's biography, which is very interesting, by the way, and Sugar Ray Leonard's biography, the one who B. Austin calls overrated. That's a whole other story. But listen, audibletrial.com/warroomsports. You go to that site, you can get you a free trial, get you a free audio book. You can try it. Let's keep it sports related. You got Wilt Chamberlain's biography, you got Dr. J, you got Magic Johnson, you got Larry Bird. A lot of the great players have their biographies in audiobook format, and it's a great way to listen to them. There's an audiobook on the Dream Team I want to get to, haven't got to yet. So audibletrial.com/warroomsports. Get you a free one.
The players don't hate me. The sponsors don't hate me.
You don't believe
the
players.
The fans don't hate me. The media hates me. The media, it's all the media pushing it.
You really,
I mean,
but really, honestly, you really believe that?
I believe it 100%. I believe it 100%. People call me by the thousands and give me support.
All right, so we all know this week that Donald Sterling, the supposedly ousted owner of the Los Angeles Clippers, he sat down with Anderson Cooper of CNN earlier this week. What did you guys think about this interview? I mean, the interview, the purpose of it was for him to basically try to clear his name, to try to apologize, but it ended up being him, like we just heard in that clip, blaming, all the hatred on the media. He claims that his players doesn't, they don't hate him, the league doesn't hate him, it's the media that hates him. And besides that, he went on Magic Johnson for a lot of this interview, and we have some of those clips that we'll play for you, during this conversation. But overall, what did you guys think about this interview?
Yo,
did it do anything for his cause, or did it make it worse?
To me, this interview was amazing. It was legendary, but for all the wrong reasons. This is classic because I really believe in his heart of hearts,
He doesn't understand the times that we live in. He doesn't understand how what he says can be taken. This guy is from another time, and he doesn't understand that racism doesn't have to be just outwardly and overt racism. Sometimes it's subtle, you know, and also his sense of entitlement. Just some of the way this guy talks is amazing, because I understand when watching him, yo, he doesn't even get it. And that's what's crazy. One part of me was like, yo, he has dementia. Then I'm like, he can't have dementia because he recalls all kinds of things from the past. But there's certain forms of dementia when you can do that. But with that being said, I think his just complete ignorance, this guy hasn't kept up with the time. He doesn't understand the culture that we live in. And it's amazing. It makes for amazing sound bites that we will use from now for the rest of eternity. So shout out to Donald Sterling. Yo, let him keep speaking so we can keep getting more and more material. It's amazing, yo.
Yo,
for all
the crazy
long
thing, like his purpose, yo, was to go on and try to apologize and clear his name, and he says more controversial stuff.
He didn't even
like
apologize.
What you said, he just
he apologized
understand.
For getting caught.
Right. Yeah, not for what he said. I mean, this guy is how old is Sterling?
In his 80s.
Oh, something like that.
82, 81.
Somewhere in between
80
and death.
He's lived his life. He's lived his life. He is who he is. It's quite obvious that, you know, his mind, heart, and spirit are not open to positive change or whatever. I don't think that his feelings towards black people are even necessarily malicious. This is, as Jimmy just said, he comes from a time where
well, you mean the blacks, because he calls them
the blacks.
Not black people, the blacks.
The colors, the Negroes. I don't think that he has a hatred towards the colors or the Negroes. I just think that, you know, this is where he kind of comes from. So if you want to call him a relic, if you want to call him whatever, the problem herein lies is he is representative of a culture within the power structure that kind of feels the same way that he does, and they're not all in their 80s. They're not all in their 60s. They're not all in their 50s. So,
teach.
You know, yeah, like for comedic value, and we are funny guys, and War Room Sports definitely has a comedic value to it within our entertainment, you know, what we put out there to the world. This will be valuable to us for laughter, because all you can do in life at situations, no matter how serious they are, is cry or laugh. And 99.9% of the time, we will choose to laugh. So I definitely extend my gratitude to Donald Sterling for him making a fool of himself so
yo,
that I'll be able to laugh.
Be
but
awesome.
It's
I,
not
I
really
both.
A laughing matter.
I
it's
cried.
Not really a laughing matter.
I cried due to laughing, though. Like, I did
yeah,
both.
Yeah, due
so.
To laughing. Due to laughing.
I say most of the stuff I laugh at is not a laughing matter. So
yeah, that's
yeah,
true, too. We
yeah,
terrible,
yeah.
Yo. We are terrible.
Yeah,
we
horrible. We are horrible human beings. We are not role models. So
we are
definitely,
not
you know, keep it.
No, but listen, if anybody's watched this interview, we know, you know, he's kind of set his sights on Magic Johnson. Magic Johnson
right.
has been involved since the very beginning because, you know, he was the person that Donald Sterling's girlfriend took the photo with and put on her Instagram page that set off this whole firestorm. So now, you know, with the line of questioning, it seems like it's become Donald Sterling versus Magic Johnson. And as a matter
well,
of fact,
yeah.
Magic Johnson, who said on Twitter he was just, you know, he was done with the situation, he was just going to keep it about basketball. After he said that, he went and scheduled an interview himself with Anderson Cooper so he can kind of explain himself and clear his name. I don't know if that was necessary. Do you guys feel
no.
that it was necessary?
Well,
let's
look
at some of these
when,
clips, and then let me
when
ask
he initially
you
said that.
If it was,
okay, go ahead.
Good.
I don't know if I say
no.
this. He acts so holy. I mean, he made love to every girl in every city in America, and he had AIDS. And when he had those AIDS, I went to my synagogue, and I prayed for him. I hoped he could live and be well.
First
I didn't
of all, what
criticize
what
him. I could have. Is he an example for children?
What are those AIDS? What are those?
Yo,
AIDS?
Not these AIDS, but those AIDS.
So you know, he started to make the conversation about Magic Johnson and AIDS. I mean, of course, he threw in a little bit of what does Magic do for the black community. And let's listen to a little bit more of that. But he kept emphasizing, you know, he kept emphasizing AIDS, and I'm not sure why. Hold on.
What has he done? Can you tell me? Big Magic Johnson, what has he done?
Well, yes, he's a business person.
He's got AIDS. Did he do any business? Did he help anybody in South L.A.?
Well, I think he has HIV. He doesn't actually have full-blown AIDS. But.
Well, what kind of a guy goes to every city, has sex with every girl, then he catches HIV? And is that someone we want to respect and tell our kids about? But what does he do for the black people? Doesn't do anything. You call up and think,
he's opened a lot of businesses in inner city neighborhoods.
The Jewish people have a company, and it's for people who want to borrow money and no interest. They want to give them a fishing pole. We want to help people. If they don't have the money, we'll loan it to you. You don't have interest, one day you'll pay us back. I'm just telling you, he does nothing. It's all talk.
All right, one more about Magic, and then we can talk about this.
So are you saying that African-Americans don't contribute to African-American communities as much as Jewish
There's
people?
There's no African-American. Never mind. I'm sorry.
Go ahead and say what you're saying, Biel. Do you feel that Magic Johnson, do you feel it was necessary for him to sit down with Anderson Cooper and kind of defend himself against these comments? Because, okay, let's even with the AIDS stuff aside, and that was kind of ridiculous in itself, he's basically saying that Magic Johnson doesn't do anything for the black community, or he doesn't do as much as Donald Sterling does for the black community. What are your thoughts on all this? Did Magic have to defend himself?
Magic did not have to defend himself. But then also understand that Magic has grown up and lived his life in the spotlight. So from my perspective, he didn't have to. But I think that he's used to the attention and used to being an influencer. He's not necessarily a talking head, but he's an influencer of opinion. And he understands that. So he had to go and clear the air or whatever. I actually understood exactly what Donald Sterling was saying pertaining to
what he was trying to say,
the African American community helping itself, but there's always context surrounding that. See, and that's the thing that bothers me when people make these statements. I'm quite comfortable with someone making what would be perceived as a radical or crazy or far out statement, as long as you give context, logic, and reason and facts coupled into why you're making that statement. Don't just throw a statement out there and leave it to linger and leave it open to interpretation. So go ahead and talk about the history of that statement, because black people's culture here in the U.S., there's a reason that we are the way we are. We are who we are, you know. And when you listen to Donald Sterling, he's a guy that you hear that white privilege. You hear the white man's got a God complex, as I like to say. Shout out to Gil Scott-Heron. You hear all of these things in there. Well, we're good, you know, good people. And look, we've given them an opportunity and a chance. The other thing with Magic, he represents everything that a Donald Sterling, coming from a white power elitist background, he's everything that Donald Sterling is against. He's everything that makes Donald Sterling afraid. Here's a black man from a poor background that has risen to a level of financial autonomy and freedom, and he's a worth nine figures now and has power and influence. So, you know, he's free from the system. He doesn't take a paycheck necessarily from a white man. So he can kind of step to Donald on a similar plane. Now, granted, Magic's not a billionaire, but he doesn't need to accept a paycheck from that system or that structure. He doesn't derive his power from that. So he's a threat to Donald Sterling. And that's Donald Sterling's perception of him as a threat from a business side, and then also from the fact that Magic gets chicks. Magic gets everything that Donald ever wanted, and Donald has all the money, but he don't get the chicks. But go ahead.
So, let me go back to what Dev's original question about, like, did he have to respond? Well, the thing about it is when he first responded on Twitter, he hadn't heard the interview. Once he heard the interview, you know, you'd be like, somebody talking about you. You're like, yeah, whatever. Then you hear it, and you're like, hold up.
It's hard not to defend yourself.
Yeah, now it's hard not to defend. When he first said that, he was like, supposedly he was watching the games and he didn't hear it. Once he heard the interview, he called Anderson like, yo, let me come, you know, let me drop this 16. But here's the funny thing, and I think Spike Lee has said it best. He said that, you know, basically Donald Sterling is picking the wrong person because, factually speaking, Magic Johnson has done a lot for the African-American community in terms of creating jobs. His foundation is one of the highest rated foundations of those that operate within the urban community. He's given money, he's given time, so it's like he picked the wrong person. I understand this. I understand, just as B. Austin said, the point he was trying to make, but yo, you picked the outlier, B. Like, what are you doing? Like, that's just not smart. You can't win going up against Magic Johnson, specifically within the NBA community. I mean, you would have had better luck going at Michael Jordan. Yo, you're talking about L.A. Like, yo, you could have pointed to Michael Jordan, who makes millions of dollars off of investing in the prison industrial complex, which disproportionately puts his people in prison. But that's how Mike makes his money. So you could have went at someone like that. No shots. But the fact of the matter is you picked the one guy, you picked the one guy who you're not going to win against. Like, what is wrong with you? Like, regardless of how you feel about Magic and him as a player, in terms of what he's done post-NBA, this is what every athlete in every sport strives to do. Yo, you went against the – like, how can you not – like, there's not one person I've ever seen, media, athlete, ex-athlete, current athlete, who doesn't like Magic, yo. That's, like, un-American to not like Magic. So that's what I thought. I'm laughing. Like I said, it's pure comedy.
I'm not an American, too. I don't like Magic.
It's just Donald Sterling and B.L.
Yeah, B. Austin don't like Magic for other reasons, but I'm just saying, in general, like, you're in the minority. Let's put it that way. Not the blacks or the minorities, but you're in a different minority. I just think he's kind of crazy.
And as, like,
he's
you,
not gonna
you
win
guys said, I understand where he was trying to go, but first of all, we know how it is in the African-American culture. We definitely don't like to hear anybody else speaking our truth. I mean, most of the time we don't like to hear our own people speaking our truth. We look at that as airing our dirty laundry. Okay, you've heard plenty of black people use the term crabs in a barrel. And that's basically what he was trying to say without actually saying it, you know, outright. But like you said, he probably did pick the wrong person.
But here's the thing,
From his culture, though, Jim, the way they give back is a little different than the way black people or anybody actually gives back. Like, Jewish people write huge checks. You know
but
what I'm saying?
On,
like,
but hold on, though. To that point, Dev, like, it's funny because Donald Sterling at this point is alienating himself from even a lot of his own people. I have a lot of Jewish friends. Right. Shout out to all my Jewish brothers out there. And talking to them, it's funny, after this interview, they were telling me, like, you know, this guy is shunning himself because he represents everything they're fighting against in terms of the stereotypical Jewish businessman. First of all, he's a slumlord, right, which is stereotypical, a racist, you know, the 50-year-old girl. He's representing everything they're trying to fight against, which is one. And for two, even within their community, they have the same thing. Now, in terms of African-Americans and giving back, we do have tons of African. We ourselves on this show right now, we have given back, spent time, energy, and money to give back. You know what I'm saying?
See,
there's people in our chat room
about
to give back.
That's where I was going, though.
All I'm saying is the fact of the matter is there's going to be crabs in the barrel inside of every community, whether we're talking about Vietnamese, whether we're talking about Jewish, whites. He makes it seem as though anybody comes up with a plan and we'll give them a ride. That's BS. I have Jewish friends that I speak to on a daily basis. That's not true either. So the thing is, you know, you can say that pretty much about anybody. He's just fighting a losing battle at this point.
All right, but where I was going was with Donald Sterling, you know, and his culture, you know, and I'm not saying necessarily the whole Jewish culture, because like you said, you know, he's alienating himself within that culture a little bit, but I'm talking about his personal culture. You know, he's one of those guys that's just used to writing a check and throwing money at a problem.
Magic, when he did his interview with Anderson Cooper, tried to let him know that there's more ways to give back, you know, giving your time or giving people the tools to be successful and you know, not just being a crutch, each one teach one type of thing. There's ways to give back. I'm not going to sit here and act like I don't understand there are some problems that just need money thrown at it. There's certain things out there you just have to throw money at it. But, you know, he's sitting here trying to kind of, you know, beat on his chest like, well, I've given so much money, but, you know, how intimate have you gotten with some of the causes that you just that you've just thrown money at? You know what I'm saying? So there is a difference in the way that you can give. Time and energy is a lot. And like Jimmy says, you know, brothers like us who don't have a ton of money to throw at problems, make sure that time and energy is, you know, something we invest into the causes that we think are worthy of that time and energy.
Time and energy is more valuable a lot of times than money. And if you want to really examine it, which we don't have time to really go this deep. One of the reasons that the disenfranchised people are kept in a lower station in life is because the money that's thrown at them is what sustains them at the level they are versus the time and energy, which would give them the tools to reach out and strive for greater things. If I'm not going to give you the resources to make yourself better, but I will throw the money at you to keep you sustained and just living and wherever you are.
So basically you're saying teach a man to fish. You're taking an articulate way to say teach a man to fish. Because that's what you're saying.
That's one of my favorite quotes ever.
Right.
And I agree.
Versus, versus fishing for him or just giving him fish. The other thing that's unfair with this interview that Donald Sterling tried to do is the comparison between Jewish culture and African-American culture. I'm no expert on Jewish culture, but there are some things that we definitely know about Jewish culture. First and foremost, it's thousands of years old. Secondly, it's structured around investing time, energy, and resources into the sustaining of the minds of those coming up within that culture to understand finance, to understand media, to understand these different elements that control the populace. And they invest in that, and that's a great thing. But African Americans touched this shore 600 years ago, 500 years ago. We're infants in comparison when you compare the age of the two cultures, and there's different value systems. So that wasn't really a fair comparison.
And B. Austin, you made the greatest
that
point because when you look at people, you know, from the African diaspora, it's like it's a completely different thing. I mean, African-American culture is so young. We're so young as a people. It's like everyone else has kind of had a head start. They try to – I don't want to get too deep into this, but when you look at Africans in general, not African-Americans, but Africans in general, they even try to separate us from other people of color. Let me just put it that way.
Right.
Because united, if we – you know, from a commerce standpoint, if we were united, it would cause trouble for the power structure. So how do you do it? You're African-American. You're an African. You know, but African-Americans, if we're going to stick to just African-Americans in terms of culture, in terms of time, we're behind. But that doesn't mean there aren't people who are trying to make leaps. People are out there working on a daily basis, not just a Magic Johnson. He's one of them, but people are out there working on a daily basis, whether it's educators or whether it's people, like Dev said, giving time. Some people give money, all kinds of things. So at the end of the day, you know, there are crabs in a barrel. We all know that. We know crabs in a barrel. A lot of them, my friends and family, are crabs in a barrel. But at the end of the day, there are people doing work. So FOA to Donald Sterling. But let's get back to these amazing clips, though.
But, Jim, I don't want people out there, you know, when I bring this up to be like, oh, God, you know, here these dudes go taking everything back to slave times. But you guys all know this already. There's a very good reason of why, you know, that stereotype exists. There's a very good reason that crabs in a barrel, you know, that whole methodology was born into our culture, and it goes back to those times when they were trying to separate us, you know, house slaves versus field slaves, some getting treated better than others, causing dissension amongst the unity. There's a reason, and all of this stuff is
syndrome.
Taught and learned behavior. You know, people think that, you know, methodologies and behaviors don't go back that far, but things are passed on generation to generation, just like good things are passed on, bad things are passed on. So there's a reason that crab in the barrel, that term even exists.
You're talking about Stockholm syndrome, where you take on the characteristics of your oppressor, and only people, the only people that don't want to discuss social issues within a historical context are idiots or those that benefit from not discussing it. So either you're an idiot because you don't want to go back and you don't want to face, because in the grand scheme of things, when you talk about culture, civilizations, and the like, 600 years, 500 years, 200 years, those are very small amounts of time. You haven't been
absolutely.
Here.
Yo, be honest, right? Here's the crazy. I was talking to someone the other day, like, because, you know, I'm a little nerd as well. So I was talking to someone about comic book movies and things like that. And we got to the whole subject of, like, time travel. I was like, yo, you know, time travel is cool for everybody, but for African-American, I don't think we want to go back too far. Like, our history isn't a great history. You know, people talk about, what if we can go back and see the culture in the 50s and 60s? I'm like, yo, you're going by yourself, B. As an African-American,
cool,
I'm trying to stay as far away from the 50s and 60s. I'm not trying to go through Jim Crow. I'm not trying to be a part of the transatlantic slave trade. Like, listen, man, so time travel is not
for black
folks. I
can't go back further than 1970. Cool.
I ain't trying to go back. Yeah, exactly. Like, yo, 70, yo. When the music became funk, that's as far as I'm going back, B. I ain't going back
exactly.
No further. So,
as soon as I DeLorean land somewhere, like, we might get out and be in trouble.
As DeLorean land.
So if that flux capacitor ain't
saying.
Working, when we get out the car, like we were doing for the morning, we'd be in trouble. See, he can chill and just mingle within the culture for a few
minutes.
That wouldn't happen for us.
Donald Sterling, I want to extend a shout-out to you and a salute because, you know, you're unaware of it, but you struck a chord with America. You've shone a light on a topic that continues to need to have a light on it, and now you're forcing dialogues to happen. Don't think for a second, if you're listening to War Room Sports, which Donald Sterling, I know you are, don't think for a minute that we don't know that there are other folks within the ownership group that may have similar sentiments. And, you know, the players are that group of African-American men where you throw a little bit of money at, you throw a little bit of dough, and you keep them, you know, keep them satiated, keep them cool. Because we know LeBron ain't really going to boycott.
I got two points there. The first one is this. Like, yo, if we jump out the DeLorean, first thing they're going to do is try to Solomon Northup us. Soon as we jump out,
exactly.
Yo, that's exactly. The one thing. The second thing I thought about when watching and listening to this entire Donald Sterling.
Don't care how fancy we look. Like, you look fancy.
It's like people hate when you say this, but for all intents and purposes, the players and the owners of the NBA are business partners, right? I mean, in fact, the players as an aggregate get 50% of the revenue. Now, the owners, of course, get most of the money. But a lot of them are ownership teams as well. But the players get – so they're business partners. One can't operate without the other. What's more important, I mean, that's debatable. But he has no respect for the players, and he comes from a different era. He doesn't look at them as being business partners. A couple times during that interview, he said, you know, what about the players? And he said, it doesn't matter. It's all about what the owners say. And Anderson was basically trying to give him a chance to get out of that.
Hang
he kept throwing more rope around
himself.
His neck. I don't care what the players. It's all about what the owners say. Like, he doesn't respect the players.
Yeah, I'm sorry. I keep laughing because I'm just looking back into the chat room, and Randon said EDE had HIV and died in a week. Magic had to jump for 20 years.
Yo, I got in an argument the other day because a guy was trying to tell me that the greatest fighter of all time was Muhammad Ali. So I said, nah. And he says, who's the greatest fighter? I said, yo, Magic's white blood cells may be the greatest fighter that we've ever known. And it's really no debating that, though. Like, but anyway,
Magic got the cure, man. That's all. Magic got the cure.
Cure
price
something stupid. The cure price something stupid that we don't know about. It's probably like Sour Patch Kids.
Magic. Or some of them sugar-free gummy bears that give everybody diarrhea.
Yo, the cure for AIDS, you heard it here.
That
War Room Sports, The cure for AIDS is gummy bears, sugar-free gummy bears. You will get the run, but that AIDS will run up out of you. That AIDS will definitely run up out of you.
Yo, my last thought on this whole thing, I'm going back to the question I asked you guys, and y'all know me, so I'd be a hypocrite to say that I wouldn't come defend myself if I was Magic, because, you know, I get into some debates on social media and that I say I'm going to leave alone, and then I can't leave them alone. So I know damn well if somebody went on TV just going on my name, you know, it's going to be something. So I can't
My name is my name.
You always got to protect your name. All right, man, so the NFL draft, of course, was this past week. If you let our fellow media members tell it, there were only two people drafted in the whole draft, and we're going to stay status quo with that today because, you know, we're on our social thing right now. It's not all about the X's and O's today, as y'all can see. So this is the whole Michael Sam versus Johnny Manziel debate. I wouldn't even call it a debate. We're just going to talk about those two guys because it seems like they hijacked the entire draft as far as the attention. And the ratings of the draft were way up, and I probably would credit that, especially in the early rounds, to Johnny Manziel because this is a guy, I think already, this 20-year-old guy, I think he's already in that mix where we always talk about polarizing figures. Because I know there's a lot of people out there who love Johnny Manziel, and there's a lot of people out there who pay attention to Johnny Manziel 24/7 because they want to see him fail. Now, the weekend of the draft, Johnny Manziel sold more jerseys than Andrew Luck, RG3, and Tim Tebow combined. And, you know, these three guys were hyped a lot, you know, when they got drafted. So he sold more jerseys than those guys combined. What makes Johnny Manziel such an interesting story that, you know, he, along with Michael Sam, who we'll talk about in a minute, you know, was basically able to hijack a whole NFL draft and come out, sell jerseys like this, and have the people of Cleveland thinking that he's Jesus coming to save the city?
I mean, I have my opinion, yo. First off, shout out to Glass from Get With It Sports, who just checked in on Twitter. Shout out to you. But it's kind of like his attitude. It's not just his gameplay, because let's face it, the guy who won the Heisman Trophy as a freshman quarterback had an amazing collegiate career. Right. He has a lot of highlights. And also, the time. We're in 2014, we always talk about the culture we live in. You know, shout out to Mariah Carey, because when a hero comes along with the strength to carry on, so on and so forth. So everybody's looking for a hero. and this guy, you know, is a lightning rod. And also, he has that sort of outlaw mentality, the whole cowboy thing where he did what he wanted to. He didn't shy away from who he was. The whole thing with him scoring touchdowns on the whole money thing. So he kind of, like, owned it. And he's one of the most popular collegiate players because of it. He's like the bad – it's like rooting for the bad guy in a sense. He has game, and he's a bad guy. So this is who we're going to root for. You know, now if he stinks, they'll turn on him in a heartbeat because that's what we do. But as of right now, I mean, he's bringing excitement to a franchise that desperately – I mean, last time Cleveland had a good quarterback was Bernie Kosar.
Right. Mm-hmm. I mean, we still don't know if he's a good quarterback. And that's my thoughts as far as his game is concerned.
Yeah.
Like you said, you know, he tore it up every time I tuned in to watch him. He was exciting, but he might not have been exciting for all the right reasons if you're looking for, you know, a quarterback. But, like you said, he owned it. Like, throwing up the money sign, like the attention, he took it and he ran with it. And I heard some interesting points this morning. I was listening to Mike and Mike, and they actually took calls. And some people called in and were saying, you know, in this age of basically hip-hop culture, that's what younger people like. They like to see that quote-unquote swag and the stuff like that. So the people who love him, that's why they love him. But we all know that he's going to get that Floyd Mayweather type of attention because he's going to have just as many people tuning in to see him fail and say, I told you so, as he has, you know, the people who actually bought his jersey and are riding for him because they like his swag. They like that, you know, it's Johnny Manziel against the system and all that kind of stuff. B. Austin, what are your thoughts?
The 24, I have several. The 24/7 media coverage, which now includes social media, which means all of us really are reporters. That helps contribute to the polarizing aspect. Now, here's I'm gonna talk a little bit about the 8,000-pound gorilla that's in the room. He is a white kid from a privileged family who's on field as well as some off-field antics fit that or fit the mold of the traditional flashy, flamboyant, charismatic African-American athlete in professional sports, particularly football. What I'm going to say is, for me personally, I love Deion Sanders. I love Terrell Owens. I like Chad Johnson because these guys brought showmanship to the game, but they also walk the walk. So if Johnny Manziel is able to walk the walk, which by all accounts, this guy, when he puts on the pads and the helmet, does more than everything that he can do to win a football game, then I would be a hypocrite to hate him just because off the field he's flamboyant and charismatic and tries to be a little bit bigger than the game or bigger than his team, because we love those other guys. We love them. And those that didn't love them because of the color of their skin, the nature of their background, whatever, but you couldn't take away from their performance on the field. So now when I talk to people and they don't like him, I say, first and foremost, all we've done is see him perform in a college environment, which, oh, by the way, you're talking about a quarterback that had the worst defense in the world. So he had to make plays and had to put up points because his defense wasn't stopping anybody. And he showed up and delivered. So if you don't like him for the flamboyance, okay, if you can be consistent and show me that that's just your character, cool. But I better not hear you say that you like any other flamboyant player and you don't like him, and those other players happen to be of a different color or a different hue, because then it becomes a social thing. Then it becomes a race thing, because now you have a problem with dude because he's white doing all of this stuff. So let's call it what it is. And that's where I hear a lot of the conversations going. By all accounts, he's intelligent. He's not just running around like a chicken with his head cut off, although he does have the athleticism to improvise and extend plays. But that's what people love, right? That's what we love Colin Kaepernick. We love RG3. We love Michael Vick. We love Donovan McNabb before he became a coward. We loved all of those guys. So why hate on Johnny Manziel?
That's I don't point. Love that. I think them quarterbacks are corny. But that's just me.
Oh, yeah, I do too.
No, but I mean, so, Jimmy, do you think he has the game? Do you think he has the skill level to be the savior of Cleveland? You know, not just putting butts in the seat because, okay, besides the jersey sales last weekend, the extra ratings from the draft last year, and you know, and the draft already killed the NBA playoffs. You know, they were going to do that if you and I and B. Austin were in the draft. We would have still killed the NBA playoffs as far as ratings. But besides the jersey sales, the extra ratings, and the season ticket packages that Cleveland sold right after that pick was made, like, does he have the skills to support all of the popularity that he has right now? That's what I want to know.
Here's the thing. Football is a consummate team sport. So there is no quarterback, I don't care who you are, that can't get it done without help. Cleveland needs a lot of help. It's hard to, like,
good moves
him.
Too. They had a good draft.
They're trying to, like, you know, put a team together. But at the end of the day, it's like, how well do they mesh? And also, how mentally tough is this guy? Because I've watched, like, you know, different documentaries and read books, and when coaches talk about how vital it is to be mentally strong to play the quarterback position, and how having, like, a bad game early in your career can kind of ruin your entire career. As crazy as that sounds. Because you lose confidence. But I don't think this guy lacks confidence at all. You know, maybe he can't do all the other
Shout out to David Carr and Joey Harrington.
That's exactly what I was about to say. David Carr and Joey
Harrington. His name is always brought up when they talk about that. That's David Carr, that is. Because
I maintain that David Carr could have been and should have been a star. I don't think he's a bust for normal bust purposes.
It was another guy, too, that I was watching.
Houston stripped his confidence
away. Mariucci was talking about some quarterback. It was an Italian guy. I can't think of his name. He had a real Italian name to play for the Niners after Steve Young left. And they were saying that he could have been a good quarterback, but he got, like, rattled after a couple games, you know, when the team stunk. And it ruined everything. And that can happen. But I don't think that Johnny Football lacks confidence at all. And Cleveland seems like they're trying to make the right moves to build that organization. In terms of just, like, grading how he'll play with his skill set based upon watching him play in college, it's tough because there are guys I watch play in college and you think they're going to come into pros and be the greatest thing since sliced bread, and they're terrible, and then vice versa. Mm-hmm. You watch them in college and you're like, yo, why are you even in the NFL? And they light it up, shout to Kurt Warner. But, you know what I mean? It's like, so you never know, because you never know the kind of work someone's going to be able to put in.
Right.
You never know how serious they'll take the position in studying the game. You know what I mean? So it's tough
everything.
To tell.
I'm
anxious to watch him play.
Cleveland had a really good draft. They've locked up arguably one of the top two or three corners in the league in Joe Hayden. Josh Gordon got in some trouble, so he might miss the season. That's a negative. But, you know, they picked up another supposedly can't-miss receiver in the draft. And then they just signed Miles Austin and I believe Earl Bennett just to make that receiving core a little bit deeper to help out their young quarterback, who they in public won't guarantee the job to. They're still saying Brian Hoyer is the guy, but eventually if it's not week one, we're going to see Johnny Manziel, you know, at some point. We all know that, but
I think it's mental. I think it boils down to his mental strength. The knock on him really is three things. Number one, his footwork is terrible. He has bad footwork, but in part that's due to his second issue, which is his height. He is 5'11". And the third issue is he tends to leave the pocket earlier because he's more comfortable on the edges where he can see everything in front of him or on his peripheral. So what he's going to have to do is study a ton of Drew Brees tape. And understand how he can get deeper drops in the pocket so he can see more and how to be more disciplined and better with his footwork. I don't think athleticism is a challenge. I don't think arm strength is an issue. I don't think intelligence is going to be an issue. You know, I think the difference between great and good, good and mediocre and garbage in the NFL a lot of times boils down to your intellectual capacity to grasp the playbook, the concepts, and how to manifest that on the actual playing field. You know, your ability to think the game is what makes a great quarterback, not your arm strength, not your legs. And so that's what it's going to boil down to with him. Confidence, I don't think he's going to get rattled. I don't think he's going to succumb to any pressure. It's all about is he willing to discipline himself, learn the game, and work on those negatives. That's it.
Yeah.
That's what it's going to be. All right,
so, I mean, we'll definitely see how it turns out. I'm sure Cleveland Browns games are going to get a crazy spike in ratings this year. I'm not going to front, you know, once it's league pass time. I'm going to tune in once he gets on the field to see what he can do. On the other side of that coin, the other person who hijacked the draft, now this was a little bit – this situation – it was strange, but then with the circumstances surrounding it, you understand. The reason I say it's strange because we haven't seen a 249th pick in the seventh round get so much attention in the draft. And, of course, we're talking about Michael Sam, who has now become the first openly gay player to have been drafted into the NFL. He took a lot of the spotlight of the NFL draft in the late days as well and in the subsequent days, you know, after the draft. Like I said, in his case, he slipped all the way down to the seventh round, 249th pick. The biggest story
with him was the fact that he had cameras in his house when the draft was going on, and when he got picked, you know, there was a kiss between him and his partner on TV, and then they did some stuff, smashing cake in each other's face as if they were getting married or something. Before we even talk about, you know, the rest of the stuff that happened after the draft, what did you guys think about that? Because it seems like there's a lot of people kind of tiptoeing around that, because we know how homosexuality is such another polarizing issue within this country, but you can't really get too many people to say anything negative about what they saw on draft day. I mean, of course, on social media you're going to get it, but if you look at all the programs that's been on, you know, everybody has been positive. So what did you guys think about that whole thing in general? I understand why the cameras were there, because draft picks a lot of times have cameras, and we all know why he was a big deal. So you expected them to have cameras in his house. But
I keep it a bean, and it has nothing to do with him being a doo-doo stabber. My thing is, yo, you were drawn in general just because even if that was a female, like, that's what I watch Cinemax for. Like, I don't need to see that. Like, so for me, it wasn't a matter of, like, there's two men on my TV kissing. I mean, you know, that happens damn near on every channel these days. This is the world we live in. So, you know, I'm not a homophobic person. I can care less what anyone does in their bedroom. It's not my business, you know. I like yams, so for me, I don't care what you like. That's your thing. But, yo, I'm trying to watch the NFL draft, B. Even if that was a chick. You know what I'm saying? Like, I just didn't want to see it. Like,
yeah.
I didn't make a big deal out of it, too.
That's kind of
the same thing
I was thinking, Jim, and what I've been saying to people all week. Like, I don't necessarily want to see a dude slobbing his girlfriend down on TV in celebration. I'm going to go a little bit farther than you, though, and I don't consider myself homophobic. I guess there's a little bit of it in every straight person. I'm going to throw everybody out there because of what I'm going to say. But, I mean, the fact that it was two men.
You are gay.
I can't say that there wasn't a thought in there, because even though, you know, we know gay people, we're cool with gay people, one of, you know, Sid Ziegler is some of the greatest people that we partner with on, on the sports media, on stuff that pertains to this situation. He's our go-to guy, and he's cool as hell.
You are
but
gay.
At the same time, I still have a son. And though I don't have a problem with gay people and the stuff that they do, that's still not necessarily the message that I'm trying to send to my own kid. So, you know, if I got my son sitting down with me and we're trying to watch some football, we're trying to watch the NFL draft, I don't necessarily want to see, you know, two guys kissing, because at 2 years old, I don't really think that I'm ready to explain to him, you know, what's going on, because already he knows that, you know, he's supposed to kiss girls and, you know, vice versa. So, you know, this is something you don't want to have to explain. Like Jimmy said, if you want to see certain things, there's certain places you can go. Like, I wouldn't put him down to watch network TV because I know that you're going to see certain stuff on network TV.
I got the Pornhub app on my phone. So, like, if I need to see something like that.
Certain places you see certain things. Like, you don't want to have to explain that kind of stuff.
But, you know, it's funny, and I know B. Austin's about to go in. But, B. Austin, real quick before you go in, because I know you're about to go in, I just want to say it's funny, though, because I hate the analogy between, like, race and sexual orientation, because you can't hide your race or color.
Don't use it.
I mean, some people have been able to hide their race, you know, and there's a long history of that. I'm not going to get into that. But your color, for the most part, you really can't hide. So I hate the analogy, but I'm not going to lie. When I saw the outrage over this, I said, that's probably what they said, you know, when they let blacks play. They probably said, look, I didn't want to see no blacks getting drafted in the league and having to explain why blacks were on the same level. You know what I mean? I thought the same thing. I thought that probably is what took place. And I always wonder, 20 or 30 years from now, like, how we look back at this and be like, damn, you know what I'm saying? Like, I always wonder that because the world is different, man. The world is just a different world. Like, I don't have a son to have to explain it to, so my vantage point is a little different than you gentlemen who have sons. So I really can't, like, you know, understand that. But I can imagine having that conversation. Because the thing is, you would have to have the conversation if it was a dude. That's why I said. Like,
and Bjelsen's son is a little older than mine, so, you know, his son can actually ask a question, like, what's going on?
And that's
on
the thing, Dad. Yeah. If you're watching ESPN, and real quick, Bjelsen, at KCMac38 on Twitter says, ESPN and the NFL Network got exactly what they wanted. They got their cake and ate it, too.
Oh, yeah, but, absolutely. I totally agree with Jason. They wanted to run with it. See, here's the thing. We've gotten so politically correct in this country that everything is kind of lumped together to where you must tiptoe around things and not express yourself for fear of offending a group of people that have been in the past oppressed and their human rights taken away and denigrated, understood completely.
And we count that too. You can't say nothing about black people these days.
Yeah, that's true. But now it's being, for this group, it's being forced upon us as if we have to accept it as it's in your face, right? So with some, it would be, well, that's just an expression of affection and, you know, this, that, and the third. Well, my counter to that is a focus on sexuality within the context of professional sports and football is unnecessary. And I've always been pretty consistent with that. I have no desire nor inclination to deny any other human being of their human rights and their right to do and choose as they see fit with who they want to copulate with, who they want to love, who they want to do whatever with. But this became a spectacle that was then exploited and pushed on the rest of us because the media understands the climate that we're living in. So now it's like besides this whole fiasco, now it's starting to surface that there are murmurings amongst the NFL players community. There are folks that are like, well, man, you know, we was all good with it a week ago, but we didn't see all this coming. They weren't expecting this. And I think that Michael Sam really is being used, and perhaps he's okay with being used and exploited by the media, by those that are on the gay rights movement. It's getting ridiculous.
Why wouldn't he be cool with it? He was the 249th pick. He might not make the damn team. So just in case, he's going to run with this and make as much money outside of football as he possibly can.
Right. And then there's
speaking
there's
of that, let me ask you a question, Bjelsen. Let me ask you a question. Since you brought that up, that's a good segue because, you know, besides, you know, he had a press conference. All draftees, they have a press conference, but they kind of group them in together, guys who got drafted on the first day, second day. So he had his press conference with the rest of his team. But then after that, he stayed behind and had his own press conference. That's one thing. Then his jersey sales were second in this draft to Johnny Manziel. But the third thing, and probably the biggest thing, because I want to ask you and Jimmy if you guys think this will be a distraction, Oprah basically put in her bid, and he'll be doing a docuseries, basically a little short reality show following him around and about his life leading up to and through training camp and all that kind of stuff. Now, the Rams have already said that, you know, inside the camp, inside the locker room, all that kind of stuff is off limits. Let me ask you a question because I promised her I was going to do this. This was a question posted on our Facebook page earlier by our friend, comedian Aaron Jackson. Shout out to Aaron. So she says, how does everyone feel about the Michael Sam docuseries? I really think he should hold off until he makes the team. Plus, can you say you want to be treated like any other player and then do a documentary series about why you're different? What do y'all think about that?
That's the biggest issue because he is separating himself and putting himself above the team. Where he
even though he keeps saying, I just want to be a football player.
Right. Well, he's saying that from the standpoint of being politically correct and saying what he's supposed to say. But there's already murmurings in the NFL players community and from within the Rams locker room where players are looking at this and saying, this is a circus coming to town. This is a circus. Exactly what Michael Sam has said that he does not want, he's embracing, and it's coming. So I believe that the pressure that a lot of this is going to put on him, he's already below average in terms of his athleticism. Now, that has nothing to do with him being, well, I won't say nothing, but I'm not going to say that that's going to preclude him from being a good NFL player, because we all know there have been professional athletes who lack athleticism. But what mental capacity and strength does he have to go that extra mile to become that extra sharp player mentally if it's being taken up by this stuff? You know, athletically, he's already below average. So now your mind is consumed with the circus and being the sideshow and being larger than life as opposed to focusing on that playbook. So I
But like we mentioned earlier, being a late pick like that, being almost Mr. Irrelevant in the draft, you know, there's something in me that's saying maybe you got to do this because you don't know how long it's going to last. But on the other hand, I think if there's anybody out there who's motivated to work harder than everybody else, it's this guy. First of all, he has a whole community, you know, riding on him at this particular moment. He has a lot to prove. He has a great chip on his shoulder because there's a lot of people who probably think that he's not going to make it, not only because he was a late-round pick, but because he's a gay guy going into one of the most supposedly macho environments there is. So I think there's a lot of people who expect him to fail. So if there's a chip on somebody's shoulder, you know, I think the chip on his shoulder has to be even bigger than any chip that Johnny Manziel may have on his shoulder. Johnny's already winning.
They're not going to cut him. They're not going to cut him because the ancillary benefits of having him around, he's already affected revenue. They're already generating ticket sales based on him being on. Well, he's not on the roster, but people think.
But what about the distraction though? Is it worth the distraction for the Rams? For somebody, I can see if he was a first round, second round pick, but this is a seventh round pick. If he makes the team, he'll be lucky, you know, to get on the field on special teams. So how many people are actually going out there to see him play if he's really not going to play?
All right, well, hold on. Let me just chime in real quick. Getting back to Aaron's comments. And shout out to Aaron Jackson, who you can catch on TV on the Aspire Network, who works for Magic Johnson, who gave her a job because, you know, he's doing what Donald Sterling said he does. Anyway, with all that being said, he is kind of separating himself, but this is a difficult situation because whether we like it or not, it's kind of historical and will be looked that way, even though this guy is damn near Mr. Irrelevant. Kurt Flood wasn't a great player, but we remember his name. Although, you know, if a great player comes out, he'll kind of trump him. Shout out to Aaron Rodgers. Just come out, bro. But it's like it's going to be a tough battle because – it's historic. He's a representative of that community. I mean, we're not in that community, so we don't, you know, necessarily know what he means to them. So I get both sides, but at the same time, this is like we just said, it's a consummate team sport, and if you want to be one of the guys and treated the same way, then you can't kind of – so it's difficult. You understand what I'm saying? Like, he's walking a thin line right here. Like, I know people that are gay, and one of the things that I have, like, you know – I'm about to sound real racist. I have gay friends, right? But everyone knows that I'm a clown and I joke on everybody. So part of the thing is like, yo, I'm going to joke on you and make stereotypical comments the same way I do to my Vietnamese friend, my Jewish friends, you know, my darkies, all of us. Like, this is me. Like, I'm, you know. So the thing is, you have to. Yeah, that's just me being funny, man. You have to be able to take it. But he's the first. Openly, that is. He's the first, so it's kind of difficult. He has certain expectations.
T.O. is the first.
I'm not going to get into the speculation game of who was really the first. He's the first. Put it like this. He's the first openly. He's the first openly. He's the first
Kerry
openly
ever
in the NFL. Again,
I used to have my questions about Randall back in the day.
Again, he's the first.
Yeah,
Randall Cunningham, though? No Randall slanders allowed on the War Room, B. No Randall slander.
None.
None at
all.
Was it the Jerry Curl man or the Walker? What was it,
man?
I used to think Herschel was. Never mind. Yo,
Herschel?
Anyway.
He couldn't cut,
so
it might have been because he was.
Yo, all I'm saying.
Oh,
well, all the players that we're naming is all speculation. So this means he's the first openly dude stabber in the league. Therefore, you know, it's a big deal. It's a big deal. Whether we like it or not, it's a big deal. So this attention is going to be placed upon him. Now, how he handles it, I mean, there's really no blueprint to how to handle this because no one's ever done it. He's walking a path that no one's ever walked. So, you know what I mean? Like, so it's going to be difficult. I can see the good
end
of that.
Making his partners walk a path they've never mind.
I was more concerned with the fact that he was in the room and there wasn't one person of color in the room with him. Like, you know.
Yeah.
Anyway.
And then the whole thing, man, and this is the last thing because, you know, we got like 5 minutes. We at least want to talk a little bit about these coaching carousel in the NBA. But it's just the kiss is one thing, but the cake, now that's overboard for anybody. Man on woman, man on man. That was overboard. Like, what y'all getting married on TV? Like, come on, man. Smashing cake in each other's face. When did that become a draft celebration? I thought that was a wedding celebration. So if y'all, you know, if they're going to get married, you know, save that for your wedding. Like, what the hell are you smashing cake in each other's faces for? All right, but I'm done. Shout out to Michael Sam. He got drafted. Congratulations. It's been a long time coming for anybody who wants to be quote unquote open about who they are. So he's brave, man. He's definitely a brave dude.
Shout to Scott. You said Jimmy is friends with the gays. Yo, Scott, if you have a gay friend in 2014, something wrong with you, B. You know what I'm saying?
Yeah,
yo, I didn't say they were men. I just said gay. So, you know what I mean? Never mind.
Never mind.
We're going to leave that one alone.
I've had three black people at my house. So, yeah, real quick, man, let's get to a little bit of NBA talk. Of course, we're not going
to
get into the actual series. We'll do that on Court Vision.
Scavvy must have never had two chicks at the – never mind.
We'll get that on Court Vision, but let's talk a little bit about these this coaching carousel real quick.
Let's talk about them, Ish. Brought to you by Fanatics. Go to WorldSports.com. Go to WorldSports.com and click on the Fanatics logo and get you some sports gear, NFL, NBA, NHL, MLB, Fanatics. It's on WorldSports.com. Now, let's talk about some basketball.
For 2 minutes.
At the end of the day, here's my quick analysis on basketball. Let's talk about LeBron boycotting if Stern didn't leave. Not going to happen. LeBron told Roger Mason to go back and retract that and say FOH, so LeBron, you a sellout. In terms of the series, the Miami-Brooklyn game was crazy in the fourth quarter. Joe Johnson got the cooking, but they still lost. Miami got away with a couple calls. The officiating in the second round has been terrible. Spurs have woken up because of the Mavericks and smacked the Blazers around. The Pacers is just soft, and they're still going to make the Eastern Conference Finals because the Eastern Conference is terrible. The Pacers are the worst one seed ever. Thunder and Clippers. Yo, Chris Paul sold the farmer in the fourth quarter. Then the refs jumped on top of it to make sure that we can get the MVP in the Western Finals. But it wasn't just the refs cheating. Chris Paul sold the farm, yo. That's pretty much my analysis of the playoffs.
Remember when the Sixers made the finals, though? They went to, like, the final game of every series.
Yeah, no doubt. That's
so
true.
Who did they play in the first round? Was it Indiana?
I know they
Indiana
played,
the eighth seed
they played, it. They played.
Because Indiana
the
was a team that they couldn't get by.
Hold on, was
so
it Toronto? They played Toronto. They played Toronto. The
no,
Bucks
Toronto
well.
Was in the semifinals. They beat
so
them
the Bucks
in
the,
seven.
What, when
beat
they played
the
Bucks
in seven. The Bucks was the Eastern Conference Finals. So, all yeah, right, for some right. reason, Indiana was the eighth seed that year and because the Sixers couldn't get past Indiana. That series went to five, which was only five-game series back then. But either way, I still think the Pacers are worse because they weren't supposed to be this bad. Like, they were a dominant one seed during the season. Mike Brown has been fired again. with him, you know, how we feel about the whole thing, we have trouble seeing why he gets hired in the first place. But this is kind of foul. Why bring him back? They kind of think the play he lost his players with his defensive style of coaching, which he always does. They're denying that Kyrie had anything to do with this, but we do know how Cleveland makes snap decisions when they don't think their star player enjoys what Mike Brown is doing. So it's kind of messed up that he got fired, but this is what they get for hiring him in the first place. My thoughts on the whole – Stan Van Gundy got hired in Detroit. He's the coach and president. It's crazy to see these kind of retread coaches sit on the sideline for a while and then fall into a job with all this power and all this money all of a sudden. The whole controversial thing that's happened is Steve Kerr, he kind of spurned the Knicks, supposedly, and took the job with the Warriors. To me, I kind of think, because people say, well, he made the right decision because they're a better team, I think that makes more pressure for Steve Kerr. I think had he taken the Knicks job, he would be under the coddling tutelage of Phil Jackson. I think his leash would have been a little longer. He would have had more time to improve the team because we all know that the Knicks are kind of in disarray right now. So, you know, kind of watch what you ask for. Everybody thinking because Golden State is better. The Golden State still plays in the Western Conference. So the Knicks in their current state still have an opportunity to get farther in the playoffs than Golden State has, being a better team than the Knicks just because of the conference.
Yo, Dev, the Knicks can get home court advantage in the East without ever winning a road game. Think about that. That's a bad record.
Yo, and the Knicks, like, seriously, the Knicks can make a few moves and be in, like, the Eastern Conference Finals next year. That's how bad the Eastern Conference is right now. Don't put it past any team in the East right now. So, you know, we'll see what Phil Jackson and everybody's going to do in New York. What did you think about the whole Steve Kerr thing, Be Awesome? Because everybody, and we don't have that much time, but everybody's talking about how, you know, Mark Jackson was fired and Steve Kerr, with no experience, comes in and he's making twice the salary that Mark mm-hmm. Jackson is making. The salary, mm-hmm. my eyebrow goes up about that, but people mm-hmm. kind of forget that Mark Jackson didn't have any experience either when they hired him. Steve Kerr had at least been a general manager.
Steve Kerr was a GM for one thing. He's a GM.
The money thing is
The second thing is, you know, from an organizational standpoint, there are 200 people that are roughly 200 people that are a member of the Warriors organization. And Mark Jackson had a problem fitting in with the culture, even though they were successful on the court. Their feeling is that Steve Kerr will not present the same issues or problems within the organization and fitting in with that culture.
Remember, he made those comments when Jason Collins came out, the Golden State Warriors, their president of basketball operations is an openly gay man. So
yeah,
that may have strained the relationship right there.
The pink mafia was involved. Warriors was like, you got to go. And you know how close they are to San Francisco, so they're like San Francisco's pink. So yeah, I see where you're going.
Across the bridge.
Yeah,
I know. Damn, B. Austin trying, like, yo, you trying to insult some young ladies out there who my, my young lady friends? Isn't it funny, though, how anytime we say anything about, like, you know, gay or alternative lifestyle, we never think about the women, yo. Yo,
<sorry. laughs> a lot of them aren't really gay. They just are willing to be trisexual.
And I love them all. delicate Latinas.
Man. Hey, before Jimmy get us out of here, real quick, do the Thunder and the Pacers in this tonight?
Thunder and Clippers are going seven.
Pacers are going to get the Wiz kids up out of here.
Yeah, I kind of think both series might end tonight. But we'll see. I want some exciting basketball. Jim, do your thing, brother.
You already know. Thanks for joining us in the War Room, good folks. Shout out to everybody in the chat room, those on Facebook, Twitter, all the calls that chimed in to holler at us. Tune in next week, same time, same place, right here. Don't forget, on demand, WRSPN.com, the War Room Sports Podcast Network. You can go check out all of our shows. And the next week, we'll be discussing the state of youth sports in America and the effects it has on kids in lower-income areas. That's right. Women's Sports loves its kids. Shout out to Wu-Tang. We'll be joined by Coach Ed Dunn of MLK High School Football. Also, of ESPN and Dick Sports documentary, We Could Be King, which aired recently, so make sure you go check that out, We Could Be King. Until then, everybody, enjoy the NBA playoffs, the NHL playoffs, and your week. Check us out, Facebook.com/Warbin Sports, Twitter @Warbin Sports, and watch our videos, WarbinSportsTV.com. Check out our entire podcast network, again, WRSPN.com. As we always say, don't accept mediocrity. Be steadfast in the war against ignorance, and we will see you chumps on top.
Tune in Jimmy, know the blueprint.
Yo,
every Thursday, 6 to 8, they do this. Shout out to Dez, PJ, Be Austin, Doc Bay on replay. WarRoomSports.com. Get that mobile app. If not, dial.
Call it
323-0012. If you're going and you sensitive, then oh well.
Yeah.
Physical podcast, let's talk push. Showtime like magic in the block push.
Magic.
Listen live, push one to join in. Rip your team or listen for your enjoyment. Hip-hop dollars, pit stop and knowledge. Should be in sports credits, I ain't talking college. Five guys, no beef though. Corporate secret, but the streets know. Belafonte, I got a G-flow. KC, royalty, I'm in beast mode. 2 hours, get your game up. Who's the best in sports cast? You better name us.
War Room Sports.
Why they let him speak? Who is around him?
War Room Sports. www.warroomsports.com. What? Ain't no more to it.